who's here? Nice to see you again. You look great. Let me sleep in your bed. Don't shake your head no. Let me sleep in your bed. You're not even going to be there. Please let me sleep in your bed. Nothing weird's going to happen. I'll sleep in the exact same position as you sleep. You can trust me. I'll even wash the sheets before you come back. How's that? Please?
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup? Let the boy sleep in your damn bed. He said he'd wash the sheets.
Yeah?
Let me sleep in your bed.
Okay.
I will not, however, wash the sheets. That is one thing that I refuse to do. I have always refused to do the laundry. It's one of my least favorite things ever.
Because you're ugly and retarded.
Now that I got that off my chest. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 56.
Woo!
And what has now officially become a long and drawn out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden.
Nobody beats me in the kitchen.
And, of course, this is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes once a week. Oh, man, we have got loads of awesome to plug right into your ears on episode 56. I am super excited. We've got a very, very special guest that will be joining me shortly. Matt Brook and Curtis Hall of the Grand Archives, or Grand Archives. Maybe I'll have to ask them about that when they get here. One of Seattle's number one bands right now, most popular bands in the Seattle area. You've probably heard of these guys before, too. They kind of stemmed out of Band of Horses. And before that, Carissa's Weird. So I'm looking forward to talking with these guys because they have been all around the world playing music in venues over in Europe and touring with bands like The Shins and who else have they toured with? Let me look this up here. The Fruit Bats, they've been on Late Night with Craig Ferguson. Pretty cool, man. Pretty cool shit. So, we'll be talking to them very shortly. Before we do that, though, of course, you know, me and you, we're just going to have a little chat and get some stuff out of the way here. Get some plugs out of the way. Remember, you know, you can go and review our show. If you enjoy the show, I really urge you guys to go out. If you use iTunes, give us a little star rating because that stuff really helps us out in the long run now that we are doing this for the venerable Noisebeam Network with many other great shows, by the way. Planned Brotherhood, Sibling Rivalry, Stack of Dimes, Grapes of Rad, Double Plus Good Games, Kicking and Zubas, Unload with Madge and Dave, all great, great shows that you can check out at noisebeam.com. So I urge you to do so. Leave us some star ratings. Leave us a review if you have the time. But literally, the star rating only takes a couple of seconds, and we really appreciate getting those on iTunes. What else? What else? Do I have anything else to bore you with right now? I don't think so. We'll just wait for later. Oh yeah, one other thing. We do have a voicemail line set up. That, like I said in episode 55, I have forgot to tell anybody about it for about 6 months, it seems like. It probably wasn't 6 months, maybe like 2.5. But yeah, we have this phone line, 609-232-BOOM. That's 609-232-2666, which is the mark of the beast. Great. Well, there go our Christian listeners, no longer listening to the Air Raid podcast. But yeah, you can call the voicemail line at 609-232-BOOM and leave us a drunk dial, or just tell us what's on your mind, you know, and maybe we can chat about it via the fake radio waves. So yeah, welcome to the show, everybody. So Mairead and I, we've been pretty busy this last week. Lot of stuff going on. I am actually going back to my real job here on the 26th, and I'm kind of looking forward to it. I gotta say, I don't know. I've been feeling rather worthless lately, rather worthless indeed. Like just, you know, kind of sitting around, you know, taking care of the kid and everything like that. But, you know, Mairead does most of the work. She's the one that has to do the feeding and everything like that. So I'm just kind of left sitting there changing diapers and picking up after everybody. Which, if you do that for, you know, 3 months straight, makes you feel pretty, pretty worthless. Unless you can keep yourself, unless you're not as lazy as I am, lazy and sedentary as I am, and you, you know, regularly just stare out the window. But regardless, we've had a lot going on this last week. We've, gone to a family reunion last weekend, which, ended up making me miss, Camaro Kev or Thunder's, bachelor party up in Vancouver, BC, which I know some of you who listen to the Stack of Dimes were listening to, where he and JD and Luke Burbank all went up to Vancouver and some other dudes and ended up having just a very flatulent time, apparently, and ran into Luis Guzman at a burger joint, I think. Yeah, so I was kind of kicking myself that I did not, go up there with those guys, but it sounds like they had a wonderful time. But I had a good time at the family reunion. It was like the first year that I haven't gotten really, really drunk. And I think it's because of the kid. It's definitely because of the kid. And then after the reunion, we went on this road trip over to, Missoula, Montana, to go, visit Mairead's sister out there. Met a bunch of great people. Listener Brian of Missoula, I got your message, and let me just tell you this really quick. Just between you and I totally agree with you. Anyway, moving on. So, you know, we have a great time over in Missoula. I was hoping to kind of tie one on. I'm sorry, I keep on having to swallow something stuck in my throat, but damn it. Had a great time over in Missoula and you know, I wanted to kind of tie one on, you know, we started drinking early in the morning, me and, Mairead's sister and, you know, having mimosas and Bloody Marys and all that good stuff. And then, you know, I kind of just zonked out for a little while. And I think it's because of the kid. It's because of having a child. Now, after the road trip, the epic road trip, we ended up going to a wedding yesterday. Yesterday being Saturday. And, you know, I went out, I bought this new suit, which is great, you know, but it's still very expensive. I'm not really a wardrobe guy. I don't know what to wear, you know, to make myself look nice. So I really enlisted the help of the commissioned salesperson, which you should never do, by the way. You should probably either go in there with like a friend who knows what they're doing, or your wife to tell you if you look good in something. Never enlist the help of the commissioned salesperson to be like, what looks good on me? I don't own many suits. Steer me in the right direction. Well, here you go, sir. Here's a $700 suit for you. I'm an idiot. But I actually ended up getting a very nice suit that fits very, very well. One of the first suits that do. And we went out to this amazing wedding out in Woodinville, just down the street from Chateau Saint-Michel. at this other small winery. I can't really remember the name of it, but it's just beautiful, just a gorgeous wedding. Congratulations to the bride and groom, Bridget and John Chun. You guys are going to make some really good-looking babies. That's for damn sure. But yeah, we had a great time. So I was thinking that I would get liquored up at that. I did not get liquored up once again. And it's because of the kid. Am I ever going to be able to drink ever again? I don't know. I don't know what's happening to me. I'm losing it. I'm losing it. But you know what? I'm going to drink bourbon like a madman when Grand Archives gets here. Because they love bourbon. And Matt Brook owns a bar here in Seattle called the Redwood on Capitol Hill. So I think he'll be able to drink some bourbon with me. So yeah, this is going to be good. This is going to be great. All right. Well, let's get to it then, shall we? We're going to go to our first musical break here. We are going to play this song. It's an older song by the Grand Archives, Sleep Driving, off of their debut release in 2008, entitled The Grand Archives. Maybe that's why I keep on messing it up. Anyway, this is Sleep Driving. We're going to be right back with Curtis Hall and Matt Brook of Grand Archives. Talk to them about touring and what got them into music in the first place. I think it's going to be really interesting, and I hope you guys enjoy it right here on the Air Raid Podcast. We'll see you in a moment.
Around the floor, swirling around.
All right, we are back. Join with me here in Dining Room Studios, the wonderful Mr. Matt Brook from Grand Archives. Is it the Grand Archives? It's just Grand Archives, right?
Just Grand Archives.
Okay, okay. I had that question before you guys got here. I couldn't figure it out. Because your debut album is The Grand Archives.
Right.
Very confusing.
We didn't want to be so presumptuous as to have our first album be a self-titled. So it's semi-self-titled.
Semi-self-titled,
We still reserve the right to do a self-titled one someday when we
That's
feel
perfect.
Like we've really made our
masterpiece. Or you just do, you know, somewhere down the road you just re-release.
Exactly.
You know, yeah, yeah. Well, thank you for joining me, sir.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Mr. Curtis Hall, is it? Wait.
Yep.
Yeah.
Curtis Hall. He can't be with us.
He couldn't be with us today.
No.
He had to do something important.
Yeah, he's still alive. He just couldn't be with us today.
Well, I must say it is a pleasure to meet you. The first time I saw you play live was Band of Horses. You guys opened up for Iron and Wine. At Numo's,
mm-hmm.
and there were about maybe 10 people in the audience, from what I can recall. I was kind of drunk.
I think I was too.
But I remember it was a great show, and I was just talking to a friend of mine yesterday, Will, who helps produce this program, and he was at the show as well, and we were talking about your drummer, Tim Meinig, at the time. Mm-hmm. He looked like this big smiling Buddha behind the drums, and that's my big memory of you guys starting out was the Buddha behind the drums. And we actually had the pleasure of meeting Tim. He was on an episode in the past with his new band Yarn Owl. Let's go back a little bit off this tangent here, and how did you kind of get started playing music?
Getting started was would have been back in Tucson, Arizona, probably, you know, 17 years old. I met...
I thought you were going to say it was like the year 1617.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was. The time machine is defunct now, but no, we were young, and I met my friend Jen Ghetto. We were just goofy kids who hung out at this goth nightclub. And then we both had limited skills, but we decided to use her four-track in her grandma's closet, and we just made these really quiet recordings, and they were terrible, but that was kind of how we got our start, and we were so excited that we were actually making recordings in our own music that we just made these little crappy four-track cassettes for our friends.
Nice. Nice. And was it like, were you playing goth music at that point? Was it like industrial?
No, we were listening to a lot of it, but it was, it was definitely very shy and as lo-fi shoegaze as you can possibly get. I mean, we were playing, you know, $50 Sears guitars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like a Silvertone or something like that?
Exactly.
Yeah. Did you ever have, like, Silvertone used to, man, those are collector's items now.
They are.
But yeah, they were worth, you know, like $50
mm-hmm.
in the Sears catalog. And I remember there was one that came with a case. Like, I mean, this was before my time, but they had that case with like the built-in amplifier
and
stuff. Did you have that?
No.
Oh, okay.
I wished I wanted one.
Yeah, yeah.
I had one of their piggyback amps, which were, you know, they did the trick back in the day.
Right, right. Yeah.
But I always... I tried to find one of those cases with the amp. It's pretty cheesy now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sure you can find one on eBay, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. All sorts of collectors out there.
Yeah, now I don't know what I'd do with it.
So you started out playing guitar?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Was it like, did your parents kind of push you into doing something like that, or?
No. My parents didn't really, I was never raised around music. My folks didn't listen to too much music. I think it was just a natural rebellious spirit that since they didn't listen to music, that was exactly what I had to do.
Right, right.
And so, you know, your obvious steps with your, you get your first Sex Pistols record when you're, you know, right when you're in middle school something.
Yeah.
And that's just life changing.
Right.
Yeah.
Mine was Dead Milkmen, Big Lizard in My Backyard. Mm-hmm. And I was playing the song VFW, or Very Fucked Up World. Mm-hmm. And my dad came in, and I remember I was sitting on my steps up to my bedroom. And I was sitting there with my friend Alan Lape, and we were just rocking out to VFW. And my dad came in and goes, "What the fuck is that?" And he takes the tape out and just proceeds to, like, you know, rip the tape out of the tape. I don't know, but, you know, the ribbon out of the tape.
Right
in front of my eyes. Tore me up, man.
I had a similar experience. I had a dog when I was a kid, and I would take my Walkman and listen to music while I walked the dog. One day I must have been sick or just refusing to walk the dog, so my old man decides to walk the dog, and he takes my Walkman. And I think it was Jane's Addiction or something in there. And he came home from walking the dog and did the exact same routine.
Just ripped it out.
Tore the tape out, and at the time not realizing how much that actually just fuels, you know.
Right.
The fire.
Yeah. Or it just, like, I resorted to, like, hiding some tapes that were very, you know, that had a lot of swears in it under my mattress.
that's always the best hiding place.
Yeah. Along with my pages of porn that I had ripped out. We won't go into that, though, because your wife's here.
Thank you.
yeah, but he never minded me playing, like, Hendrix and stuff like that. It was only the Dead Milkmen. He hated the Dead Milkmen.
Sure.
Which was a terrible thing, because one day, I come from a small town on the Kitsap Peninsula, and one of the guys that lived over there, I can't remember his name, but he was friends with Dave Blood. And so Dave Blood would come over to our small town sometimes and just visit. And I had a chance to go meet him when I was like 13 years old. My dad would let me.
No.
Yeah. So he thought I'd be corrupted, which it was a little too late. A little too late.
It always is.
Yeah. So you started playing music with your friend Jen over in Arizona. That's where you're from originally?
I'm from Iowa originally, but we're all from all over the place. But me and Jen grew up formatively in Tucson, Arizona.
Right. And so how old were you again at that time?
Me and her met when we were 16.
Yeah.
And from, you know, 16 to 21, we spent just traveling around in a van and living in various places. And that's pretty much how we ended up in Seattle.
Wait, were you doing shows at that point? Like,
you know, like
trying to do shows, cafes or whatever.
Yeah, open mic shows at grungy little hippie cafes.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was how we kind of got our start into just traveling and not being stuck in Tucson.
Uh-huh. What do you ever go back to Tucson?
Yeah, I go back sometimes. It's actually not the worst place to be stuck. There's, you know, obviously a lot of great music that has come out of Tucson.
Yeah. And then how did you guys kind of connect with everybody else then? Because this is before Jen Ghetto and you kind of formed Carissa's Weird, right?
Right. I mean, this was pretty much, we were calling it Carissa's Weird all along.
Oh, okay.
And then we were living in Olympia and met Isaac Brock from Modest Mouse.
Oh, okay.
kind of a long story how we met, so I won't get into that, but we took a liking to each other and he took a chance on us and took us on a Modest Mouse tour. I think it was the Lonesome Crowded West tour.
Oh, really?
And we did some West Coast dates. And then from there, you know, things just kept... that was just how we started meeting people. And
Making connections and stuff.
Getting more people to add to the band that were talented, that knew how to play their instruments and that kind of stuff.
Right, yeah. So had you ever taken, like... lessons or anything like that before when you started, just kind of playing by ear?
Yeah, just kind of trying to learn by listening to the stereo.
Yeah. Do you think that's the best way to learn?
You know, it's tough to say. Probably, you know, at the age I'm at now, I look back and wish I would have learned how to write sheet or read sheet music.
Right.
I don't know how to do that. I can do most stuff by ear, but
yeah,
But, it, you know, I probably could have taken a lot more of a proactive approach to it.
Yeah. I've always found that, too, like, because when I was in, when I was going to college, I became friends with a bunch of, like, people that were studying music, right, in school. And I had never had, like, formal lessons. You know, I'd gone off and on, you know, and this is going to sound like I'm telling you that I'm a really awesome guitarist, and if you ever need another guitarist, you should just, you know, give me a call, whatever. Okay. But it's not. I'm not going down that road. One of the guys that I lived with for a little while, he was a guitar major, you know, in school, and he was amazed that I could play what I was playing, even though I didn't have like this formal training, this classical training, you know.
Right.
And I don't know. I've always thought that that's kind of the best way to learn, because you kind of explore it and find it yourself a little bit, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said for you know, wanting to learn because you really want to, as opposed to,
right.
You know, that's what that's what your parents are paying for you to go to college to do. And you damn well better learn how to do it.
Right. Right. Yeah, but I guess you can, you know, I mean, you can see it both ways then, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, I don't know. It sounds like a dead end road. So, so you guys hook up with Modest Mouse, and I mean, at that point, they weren't that huge. Like, Lonesome Crowded West was just starting to gain in popularity at that point, right?
Right, but. To us at the time, they seemed like the biggest rock stars we could possibly ever meet.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And
we were
in awe. And the fact that they were headlining shows outside of their hometown was just that seemed like a goal that we'd never be able to even come close to achieving.
Right, right.
So, I definitely got to say that Isaac taught me a lot and did a lot for me.
Uh-huh.
He's a great guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a huge fan of that album when it came out.
Sure.
Yeah, that was an excellent album. And so where did you guys go? You said West Coast tour?
Yeah. Yeah, just we went down to it started in Tucson, and then whatever piece of crap van we had at the time broke down immediately.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up we made it from Tucson to the LA show by hitching a ride on the freeway. This guy who had a Corvette or some kind of sports car that we barely fit in, with guitars and amps just sitting in our lap. From LA, we rented a U-Haul and built this really terribly built a hammock thing that was in the back. So two people would drive and two people would sit swinging in the back in hammocks.
Yeah.
But that was our first. That was
a little dangerous.
It was very dangerous, and in hindsight, really stupid. But I mean, those are the kind of fond mistakes that you look back upon with good memories.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, was touring always a good time for you too, or did you guys start to get on each other's nerves?
You know,
after a while?
Touring always is that's the nature of the beast. It always is what it is, and
you're
feeling like you're having the worst time until. You know, you've been back home for a week, and then you think that it was the best time you possibly ever had.
Right, and you want to go back out.
Always.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've often wondered about that. And that's like my favorite question when musicians come in on this show, because I always love hearing the tour stories.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think you definitely, as a growing band, you always give yourselves a good high five when you graduate from the Motel 6 to the Super 8.
Right.
That's a big step. That means that you're that instead of putting five people in the clubs every night, you're putting six. And
right.
And
right.
Once you get past Super 8 and you start, you know, getting into the Holiday Inn, well, you've made it. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it? Did you always find it kind of soul crushing when you would show up in a different state and there'd be like two people in the audience?
Oh yeah, it's a terrible feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Happens all the time. Though you just start to get used to it. Actually.
Right. Right. Well, did you guys just like, well, you know, we're just going to practice then.
Yeah.
Is basically what it is,
that's
right?
That's the first positive spin you'll try to put on.
Yeah. And that only lasts so long.
Mm-hmm. You know, someone's always going to say, you know, well, these two people that are here, you know, we're going to change their
lives.
We're
going to blow them away.
We never did.
Yeah. And then halfway through song number two, they're gone.
Yeah, exactly.
They were way more into goth. Yeah. So that must have been a really cool feeling too. I mean, especially, you know, hooking up with a band that you admire, mm-hmm. right? You'd known about Modest Mouse before you, mm-hmm. you guys hooked up with them.
Yeah.
I mean, that just blows my mind, man. When you get somebody that's at a certain level that digs what you're doing.
It was a very lucky break for us.
Yeah.
We were blessed. It was a lot of fun. Those were the very first years and yeah, it's been nothing but fun ever since.
Well, hey, this is a great spot to take our first or second musical break. What should we play? Another Grand Archive song.
Oh, you're asking me?
Yes.
Don't play anything off the second record. How about Louis Real off the first record?
Louis Real?
Sure, let's try that one.
Okay. We're gonna go with Louis Real. This is by Grand Archives. And we will be right back with Matt Brook, and we're going to talk a little bit more about his musical history. So start writing the Encyclopedia Britannica for this one, because you're going to enjoy it. All right, we'll be right back. More of the Air Raid Podcast to come. See you in a moment. We were back. That was Louis Real by Grand Archives. I almost said the Grand Archives once again.
That's okay.
Welcome back to Dining Room Studios, high above the Greenwood neighborhood, looking down on all the prostitutes and the Cascades. So we've got, you know, part of the view is great, part of the view kind of seedy.
The Cascades are seedy.
That's true. So when we left, we were talking about how you guys kind of jumped on to this West Coast tour with Modest Mouse, and they helped you out quite a bit with Carissa's Weird. And so let's jump ahead a little bit, and how did you get involved with the Band of Horses?
Well, what had happened was Carissa's Weird. We'd realized that we'd pretty much finished our course. We'd had, you know, roughly three albums out, and it was just at the age we were at and at the time everything was going on, it just seemed like the smartest move to end on a good note.
Yeah.
Anyways,
yeah.
So then everybody scattered and started doing just projects, and Ben was doing he started this project called Horses, and that was that. He ended up getting a couple opening slots for Iron and Wine at the Numos.
Yeah, yeah.
Asked me if I'd come on and play a couple of songs. And, you know, of course I would. That sounds like a fun time. And those shows were really fun. And then ended up doing a full U.S. tour with Iron and Wine, still as just horses.
Right, right.
Which then everything led snowballed really fastly, and led to Sub Pop, you know, picked it up, and then I just ended up all of a sudden part of the band, and. Uh-huh. Like I said, it all happened really fast, and we were just, next thing you knew, we were in the studio with Phil Eck, who is obviously amazing. And
yeah, and he's done stuff with he did
Built a Spill.
Built a Spill and
La Save Five. I mean, so much stuff that we were listening to religiously at the time.
What was that like? Well, let's talk about that for a second.
Sure.
What was that like going into the studio? Phil Eck is there. I mean, was your mind just spaghetti at that point? Like, you've got Phil Eck giving you suggestions on where you should take a song, or, you know, or telling you that this sounds really awesome what you guys are doing right now.
Right.
Like, did you almost cry? 'Cause I think I would have.
No, I fought back the tears.
Because you're not a pussy like me. Okay. Yeah.
No. Like I said, it was all just going on so quickly that there was never really time to ingest it all and to realize the severity of the moment. I mean, don't get me wrong, Phil is a taskmaster. But rightfully so, because he puts out amazing stuff. And that was a great learning process, but it wasn't, there wasn't much fear to be had because we didn't have enough time to work up anxiety about it.
Right.
It was just one day we were there and we were working, and in the end, making that album, turned out just to be the most amazing time. Every day was fun. You know, every turn that the songs would take in a new direction, you know, due to production or due to what, you know, Ben was wanting to do with them or ideas that I was having, the whole thing just seemed to click really naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end of the day, we made what I think was a pretty decent record that I'm still very proud that I was a part of.
And that was the first Band of Horses record.
That's right.
Funeral, right?
It was called Everything All the Time.
Oh, Everything All the Time. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Funeral was
on
it.
Yeah. 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 And that became kind of like Seattle's, I mean, everybody in Seattle was just all about that album, and everybody elsewhere was all about that album as well. And I mean, do you remember thinking back to it now, after everything's kind of over, you know, with that mm-hmm. part of your life, do you ever think back to that and just go, wow, that happened?
Yeah. It was surreal at the time. You know, folks would be saying to us that everything is happening and everybody's listening to this song and everyone's liking this record. I don't know about the rest of the guys. Me personally, I came from, I was still stuck in that Chris's weird defeatist mentality.
So like, anybody, oh, it's not that good.
Anybody's saying that, I'm like, you know, they're just blowing smoke up our ass. They're just being polite.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because they're friends.
Right, you know, what are they going to say? The record stinks, but no, you know, being able to step away from it, I realized that it was actually a really a good record to listen mm-hmm. to.
Yeah, and where did that record take you guys? I mean, you guys must have done a U.S. tour and European tour after
as
that,
as soon as that record came out, I was, like, I hate to keep being redundant, but everything was just happening so fast, and it was just, I wasn't ready to fully commit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ben had more realized the gravity of the situation, and it was just who knows? That was when I went on to start Grand Archives.
Okay. So that's when you broke off. You started this really cool little bar in the Capitol Hill neighborhood called the Redwood.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about this with you and Lisa out back. About running a bar.
Right.
And so what what made you guys decide that you wanted to open this place?
We had a couple other friends that were also interested, so we decided to put our heads together, and it was just the right place, right time. This great location opened up. It was a seedy old laundromat, so, I mean, it wasn't really that great of a location. But we felt confident that we could put some work into it, and... you know, knock on wood, we lucked out, and now it's just a nice little neighborhood bar.
That
serves good food and drinks.
Awesome, awesome. So, and if you're in the area, where is it located?
It's located on Capitol Hill.
Okay, if you're in the Capitol Hill neighborhood at any point in your lives, even you people listening over in Japan, if you ever come over to Seattle, go to the Redwood, and it's free drinks all the time, right?
That's right.
That's it. Yeah.
Okay. Look us up, but don't call us. We will not answer the phone.
So was it kind of like, this is something that I've wondered, because we've got a couple of friends in common here, and I've always wondered, like, the reason that you guys started this bar, was it something that you thought you could do easily, like have like a day job that could support your playing music? Is that part of it?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, honestly, it was, other than playing music, the only thing I know how to do is wash dishes, cook food, and serve alcohol. I mean, that's what all musicians...
And you do it well.
That's what all musicians know how to do. That's what they do as their day job. And I figured, well, I don't know. It'd be fun to own my own day job. And so...
Be your own boss.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. That was the plan. You know, I wouldn't have done well if I tried to open an accounting firm or a Chinese food restaurant. I don't know.
Yeah. Probably would have failed if you tried to open a Chinese food restaurant.
Yeah. There's just a couple things I know how to do.
There's plenty of places to get cashew chicken out there.
Yeah, that's right.
So you start Grand Archives. Mm-hmm. And who did you guys, what was the lineup at that point? Just some friends of yours or?
Yeah. I mean, you know, as well,
people
as
that you've met.
Seattle is, you know, 90% musicians.
Yeah. Somewhat incestuous.
Yeah. Very. Yeah. Everybody knows each other, and we're still living under this big cloud of the grunge era. And during that time, everybody learned how to play sloppy guitar, and now we all still do it together.
I don't know if it's I was talking to somebody was doing an interview, or I was doing an interview for a local blog site, and they were asking me what I thought of where things have evolved from, like, the grunge era. Mm-hmm. Right? And there's still that camp, there's still a large camp of bands out there that still kind of are stuck in that kind of the quote unquote grunge scene,
right.
I guess, you
right.
know, like the Layne Staley voice, you know? And then there's also this camp that's much bigger, much more popular, I believe, of the Seattle music scene that's going more into, like, the folk, kind of shoegaze, indie route.
Right.
You know? Which you guys have gone into. I think you kind of fit into that, like, alt country folk, because you guys do a lot of, like, harmonies and things like that. Right?
Sure, yeah. And we grew beards.
And you grew beards, yes. And you wear flannel and
So that was half of our, you know, we grew the beards before we wrote the songs. Not really. But I don't know. Seattle's had a funny transition ever since the grunge era that went to you know, I thought a fairly amazing indie scene with Up Records.
Totally.
You know, there was so much great stuff.
God rest their soul.
And it was a lot of diverse stuff. You know, the Murder City Devils were doing just the rock and roll. And, you know, then you had other bands doing more like Chicago mathy kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Up Records and Sub Pop were continuing to do great stuff. And now Seattle's getting slightly pigeonholed, like it did back in the grunge days. Now we're all just bearded folk hippies.
Right, right.
But, you know.
You should change that, dude. You should get a mohawk and just dye it like hot pink or something like that and just go from there.
Well, history is always bound to repeat itself. And anybody who's still playing grunge from the grunge days should keep doing it, because it's about to become the next big thing. If history proves to repeat itself.
Right. That's totally true, though. I was, I talked about this on the last episode. I went over to my grandmother's house. My grandma had saved these catalogs, Montgomery Ward and Sears catalogs, from every year that the grandchildren were born, so that we could go back to this thing and look back on what the styles were, you know, back in the 80s and stuff. And so I'm flipping through this catalog. I wanted to throw it away, but my grandma insisted that I take it home with me. So now it's down in my garage. I hope my grandma's not listening.
Okay.
But I'm flipping through this thing. I was like, no, this is Capitol Hill right here. This is everything that Capitol Hill wears.
Sure.
It's from the 1980
exactly
Montgomery Ward catalog.
Exactly. It's all going to repeat itself. It has to.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Okay, so you start.
That's a nice thing your grandma did, by the way.
It's actually pretty cool. Like, I was like, oh, it's just one more thing I got to hold on to, you know, this big catalog. But it was actually pretty cool.
No, that's
sweet. To flip through that thing. Yeah.
It's good that she gave it to you. That would make her a hoarder if she didn't.
Right. Well, she's borderline.
Well.
Borderline. Do you watch that show?
I can. It gives me anxiety.
Oh, my God. I went through a little stint where I was watching that show every day. Because I'm still on paternity leave. You met my my little daughter.
I did.
I got a week left of paternity leave, and then I go back to work. But yeah, I've been watching Hoarders on Netflix streaming a lot.
Right.
And so that's why this place is so clean right now.
It does look nice.
Because I am struggling to not become a hoarder.
Now, see, so it works for you. You were talking about Netflix. I've been watching nothing but Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares.
Which is terrible if you own a bar.
I feel that it's helping me, though.
You're learning what not to do.
It's teaching me valuable lessons.
Good.
And I feel that maybe Hoarders is teaching all of us good lessons.
Yeah. It's not teaching my wife. She still leaves little crumpled pieces of paper all over the place.
Mm.
Yeah, which is weird.
That'll snowball.
It will.
You gotta watch
it. And that's why I keep on telling her. I was like, Mairead, you're becoming a hoarder. It doesn't go over very well, but I just want to get it out there. I want to put it out there so she knows that she's got to be careful because that shit can just take over.
I hope, you know? Like your grandmother, she doesn't listen to this show.
She does. Oh, I'm going to be in so much trouble. And I got in trouble the last time I said that on this show as well. So, yeah, that's going to happen all over again. History repeats itself.
Yeah, live and learn, right?
Yes. So you start this bar, you start this band.
The Grand Archives. For this interview.
Can I just do that?
Yeah, we'll call them the Grand Archives.
The Grand Archives.
That works.
And things kind of take off again for you.
Mm-hmm.
So what you were telling me when we went off air and went to the musical break that your second show was at the Paramount.
Right. We had started this band, and our goal was to play a couple really low-key shows at some really small venues, work the kinks out. But like I've mentioned, my buddy wouldn't let that happen. And so he threw us onto the Paramount stage for our second show, and we were so far out of our element.
Now, this was Isaac Brock from Modest Mouse again, yeah.
And we got a lot of backlash for that. I mean,
What was the backlash about? Well, you said that before, too, so.
Well, you know, we were a new band. There was the Band of Horses hype that I still didn't know existed. There was, you know, and then I'd never even looked at this, the Pitchfork, which is now the be-all, end-all of all music.
But, right.
And then apparently they'd written something nice, which was nice of them. I can't complain about that. And getting to play at the Paramount, I can't complain about that either. But a lot of people kind of gave us the silver spoon treatment that we were bypassing all of the dues that you have to pay.
Right.
Which, you know, that's fair of them to look at that way. I mean, there's so many struggling bands out there that, yeah, they had every damn right to be pissed.
That shit makes me so angry, though. Because, like, first of all, if the music is good and people enjoy it, like, then you don't have to go through all the bullshit, right? The years and years of rejection and everything until you write the one song that, you know, gets you some airplay or something like that.
You know, I'm sure it depends on who you ask on how they feel about that subject.
I guess so, yeah.
But yeah, so we went through that level of backlash, and we swam through the deep end on that second record and filtered out, you know, some of the hateful vibes or whatnot. But I feel like now we're finally getting a chance to prove ourselves beyond any sort of hype. There's no more hype going about us, which is pretty much the biggest weight off of our shoulders.
But I think you guys have a level of respect in the city of Seattle specifically, that goes beyond all the hype. Like, because people know who you are. People come to your shows when you play.
Sure,
you
know? we've all.
Like, I mean, you've got a big loyal following here in the city of Seattle. I don't know what the rest of the country is like when you guys go on tour, but I mean,
you can imagine. It's
is it small? You guys still playing small shows?
Definitely in America we are. Yeah. It turned out that that going over to Europe, I never dreamed that we'd have the money to be able to do anything like that in any band that I've ever played in. But we've been having a lot of fun, a lot of good response over there. And so you never know what turn music is gonna take you on. You think that you work for one particular thing, and then that is the thing that is gonna turn against you. But there's always something else that's going to open up that'll surprise you. I guess I'm probably sounding confusing now. Maybe because it's hard to explain.
It could
from
be the third
of
glass
view.
Of whiskey too. You know.
Yeah. But we're at a level right now where we're personally, as the Grand Archives, having so much fun and just writing songs that we want to write. That's a cliche. Anyways, I'm not sure the point I'm trying to make, but
I'm getting you. I'm getting what you're putting down here.
Good. I hope so.
I don't know if anybody else is, but
I hope if your grandma's listening, she understands too. She collects the catalogs. She understands the time and that kind of
thing.
Yeah,
totally. Well, you kind of touched on this a little bit. Like, when you guys went over to Europe, it was kind of surprising.
Sure. I mean, we literally thought that we were throwing money out the airplane window flying over there. And we're doing it, you know, this was like, okay, this is like starting over from scratch. We're a 16-year-old band again. But we're a band of 16-year-olds.
Right.
It was amazing the response over there. Which is funny. I think that was the same thing that happened with grunge. America got bored of it real quick, but Europe just kept loving it.
Right. Well, there's the rest of the world for this stuff to kind of fan out to, right?
The rest of the world, yeah. So I think that...
You like Spinal Tap.
Yeah. Yeah, that's scary to think of, but
that was not a backhanded compliment. That, you know, whatever.
Nope. Yeah. Like you said, with Netflix, I was just watching that story on Anvil. I don't know. Have you seen?
Oh,
that
no,
one?
I haven't watched that yet. I need to see that. Is it still up on Netflix streaming?
It's on there to watch.
Okay,
and it's very funny to watch.
I need to check that out.
Unless you're me, and then it's really cringeworthy.
Oh no.
No, only joking. But Netflix is the topic of conversation these days.
Yeah, it's been ruining my life.
Yeah,
and a lot of people are bent out of shape about, like, Netflix is doing the whole, like, price restructuring.
Sure,
and that's what everybody's talking about and stuff. Here's what some friends and I were talking about this the other night. Mm-hmm. Is that this is exactly what happened when Blockbuster came in and pushed Hollywood Video out.
Right?
Because they came in with lower prices, like dirt floor prices, and everybody went to Blockbuster and was like, yeah, you know, Blockbuster's great, really, really cheap, and it's the small company pushing out the big company. And then all of a sudden, Blockbuster becomes the big company, starts charging too much.
Right.
Netflix moves in. Dirt floor prices. It's cyclical.
Sure.
It's going to happen all over again.
Again, history repeats itself.
Yeah. Couple years. That's it. That's going to be the title of the show.
Okay.
History repeats itself.
Oh, well, thank
Brooke.
You. Thank you.
Yeah. Good job, sir.
My pleasure.
But yeah, it's going to happen all over again.
It will. It will.
In a couple of years' time, people are going to be like, Netflix is the enemy, big business, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
And they're going to go with nut picks.
Sure. Yeah. Everyone's bubble will burst. It's the same with anything. It's the same with music. Eventually, someone's going to cry sell out, and then you're down the drain.
Way to bring it back around.
Thank
you. It's really good. You're good at this.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
So Europe, you guys went over there. Much to your surprise, you guys played a bunch of great shows on your European tour. What countries did you hit up over there?
Most of them.
All of them. Okay.
I mean, obviously not all of them. you know, Spain, Italy, Germany, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, UK. Our best turnouts, other than Sweden, have been in Croatia.
Really?
I'm going to be honest with you. I had no idea where Croatia was or what part of the world it even was.
Uh-huh.
And we've been back there a few times now, and it's always the response is amazing. The shows are phenomenal. And
really?
Going to Europe has become the only way that as a band we can survive and make money right now. If we didn't have that avenue, our ship would have sunk by now.
You think so? Are you just saying that because like you're kind of defeatist when it comes to this kind of stuff?
You know,
or is it?
You caught me saying the defeatist thing earlier. Yeah, I mean, if we're gonna get into a therapy session, you're probably right. I do have a little bit of that, but no, honestly, just looking at the small amount of money it takes to keep a band alive,
right?
That's what's keeping the rent at our practice space paid right now.
Uh-huh.
And it's what's keeping, if our van breaks down, that's what's fueling us as a band, which
the money from
European touring. I never would have guessed it. I never would have guessed it. Cause I thought it was cool opening up for Modest Mouse when I was 16.
Uh-huh.
And that was the biggest thing I'd ever do.
Now, are you guys headlining? When you go over to Europe, are you guys headlining shows?
We're headlining shows.
Really?
Yeah. And wow. I mean, don't ask me how the hell it happened. It doesn't make any sense to me either.
It's fucking amazing, though, man.
I'm waiting for someone to come out and say that it's all a practical joke on us. When we show up to a country we've never been before and the show is sold out. And it really is surprising.
Yeah. And what size shows are we talking about? Like hundreds of people or?
Yeah, not big. I mean, nothing over 1,000, but you know, like 500 people. But that to me,
that's a big show.
To me is huge.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that sounds trite to a lot of people, but to us, it's huge and it really makes our day.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. And I wish you guys all the luck too world, because you guys are a great band. And now let's talk about this album.
Yes.
That is still in the works, right?
Yes.
Okay, because I was kind of, when you showed up here, I had to ask you the question off air because I had no idea. And now it kind of defeats the purpose of telling everybody that, because I didn't want anybody to know that I didn't know what I know.
Okay.
You get it?
I do, but I don't think anybody else does.
But this album that you guys... Well, you guys have kind of like a demo on your website that you can download for free.
Mm-hmm.
And we've featured a couple songs. We got in touch with Sub Pop and made sure it was okay in the episode that we did with John Richards.
Mm.
And it's really good.
Oh, thank you.
The stuff that I've heard on the website is really good. And so you were saying that, because I was under the impression that the title of the album was Villains.
Right.
But that's kind of come about
Facebook. Right. What we're doing right now is, like I said, we feel like a lot of pressure has been relieved off of us. There's not much expectations. I mean that in the best way possible. And we're enjoying not trying to rush a record.
Right.
And what we're doing right now is we're just, spending our own money and making these demos.
Uh-huh.
That we don't put ourselves through hell trying to record them perfectly.
Right, right.
We're just trying to get the song down. And then as soon as we do, give it out for free on the internet. These are just demos. So we've released I believe it's 7 to date right now that we're just on our website. We're letting fans take for free and inviting as much criticism or anything good or bad that anybody has to say about it. And then also, you know, developing our own opinions while playing this stuff at live shows and really just enjoying the creative process of making a record while being able to share it with people because of the technology that exists now.
Right, right. So are you ever planning on putting this out on like 7 inches or anything like that? Or are you just, it's just, you're putting music out on your website just for people to...
We're just putting it out there for free. At the end of the day, we could go in and then redo every song and make a full album. And then, again, just keep giving away the demos for free.
That is really cool.
It's a fun way to do it. And I feel that...
Like you said, it's like it totally takes the stress out of the whole thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're just doing it. Yeah. There's no... I don't even know what to say.
And it's fun. It's a lot of the times, if you're a fan of a band, you'll go to see their show and they'll play new stuff and you've never heard it before.
Yeah.
Now people kind of have a chance to have slightly heard a version of it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they, along with us, will get to see these songs evolve.
Right.
You know, maybe
they
speed up in tempo. Maybe they slow down. Maybe the lyrics change. Maybe we scrap them all together.
Yeah.
But at least it adds to the... It adds to the story of the making of the album, and by default, folks have just on the internet started calling the album Villains.
Yeah,
which is funny. We've never had an album title until the album is done. And
it's a good album though.
Thank you. We're really enjoying it. It's working out. We've really taken a lot of acoustic guitars out of the mix and. Uh-huh. And just a lot more, you know, rock and roll, little less wearing your heart on your sleeve, a little more
straightforward.
Just trying to have fun.
Yeah,
And not make too much of a dramatic statement, but just remember that music is fun.
Yeah. So no songs about politics on this album.
No songs. Never songs about politics. It's the worst idea ever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. Tell that to Country Joe and the Fish, my friend.
Right. No songs about politics. No songs about heartbreak. We're all married dudes now. If we wrote a heartbreak song, everybody would know that it's contrived.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You were writing about your experience when you were 16.
Yeah.
Yeah, first girlfriend. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny you said, like when you're like going to shows and playing new songs and people actually enjoying it, because I got a Facebook message from a really big fan of your guys's, Stephen Graham, who has a music blog, who went to your latest show and said that you guys started out with a brand new song.
We did.
And he stated on his blog at whatradio.com or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
He stated in his blog that it was one of the first shows that he's ever been to where he totally didn't mind that you guys started out with a brand new song that he had never heard of before.
Well, that's nice of him to say.
Yeah.
It's a risky move to do that. But like I said, we're trying to keep people in the process with us while we're making this record. And we took a chance on that one, but... You know, it was fun. I feel like as long as we're having fun on stage playing, it translates a lot better in a live environment, as opposed to if we've got some stale hit that we're so tired of playing.
Right.
And
that's bound to happen though too.
We're playing it just like we're clocking in to a day job.
Mm-hmm.
At the bar. Goddamn bar. Yeah.
Well, when is quote unquote Villains, and I use that loosely. When is Villains slated to come out?
Tough call.
Really?
That's part of the pleasure of making this record.
Yeah.
Is that there is no deadline.
Yeah.
And I feel like a deadline can ruin a record.
Uh huh.
So, I mean, you know, we're not going to make a Chinese democracy out of it and wait for...
Release it 15 years from now?
Yeah, no. It'll come out within the next year.
And you're not going to get cornrows?
We did that for the second record.
Okay, good.
And that's why the second record did so poorly.
Because of cornrows!
Yeah, we thought it was smart.
That damn hairstyle.
We thought we could get some vacationing 16-year-old girls to... that was a demographic we were
missing. Planning on playing MTV's Spring Break is what you... Yeah.
We were trying to cover all demographics work for a crossover hit.
Yeah. Well, once you have a high top shoe with your name on it, just MAT on the back of the high top.
Right.
In one of your music videos, then you'll know.
Mm-hmm. I've designed the shoe already.
You got it. It's an old Nike Air.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Matt Brook, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, and Lisa, thank you for coming.
That's my
wife. And sitting here in silence the whole time. Yeah, I asked her when we started, I was like, you know, we do appreciate a laugh track. And she thought it was a terrible idea, so she didn't laugh at anything.
I want to thank my beautiful wife, Lisa, for adding the laugh track.
Yeah, we'll add it in post. Yeah, we'll get some laughs. We'll record some of you laughing and just see one person laughing after every really retarded joke that I tell. Yeah, thank you guys so much for coming. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on. And what's coming up with Grand Archives? Any shows? You got Carissa is weird.
She is.
I was thinking of the old Nickelodeon show.
Like, oh, Clarissa Explains It All?
Yes, yes.
Right. When Clarissa's Weird was a band, we had a problem with that.
I would imagine, because...
That's okay.
That's what I had always equated it to.
Fair enough. Clarissa's Weird was a terrible band name. We knew it from the get-go, but with some sort of punk ethics, we stuck to our guns.
Good.
And that probably was our downfall. We are going to try to surprise some folks... potentially in September of this year.
Oh, excellent.
With the concept of possibly playing the first album, Ugly But Honest, from beginning to end with the same members that recorded that particular album.
Nice. Very good.
So no guarantees yet, but it looks like that might be a, what do you call that, a leak? I leaked that.
Nice. On the Air Raid podcast.
Yeah.
You heard it here first, okay. Folks. Can I get any cheesier than that? So is that going to be like a Seattle show or is it going to be a tour?
No, that'll be a Seattle only thing.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. All right. Excellent. Well, thank you again for coming on. Remember, you can find Grand Archives at grandarchives.com, where you can download this, this quote unquote villains demo. You said there's about 7 songs up here that just kind of refresh.
Right. Well, we put up 4, took those down, put up another 3.
Oh, okay.
I think we'll just try to keep it slightly exciting and...
New stuff's just going to come. Yeah. It's going to appear when it does.
The old stuff will go, the new stuff will come, and eventually an album will be made, and we would like anybody to be part of the process with us.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I look forward to it, man. And we're gonna go out today with a song off of the demo, one of these free downloads that you can get at grandarchives.com. A Way Around. Is that a good one?
Should we
go with that one?
That's a nice choice, thank you.
All right. We'll go with this one. And remember, you can find us at air-raid.net, also on the Noise Beam Network, brought to you by the good people at Fisher Broadcasting. You can also find us on iTunes, Zune Marketplace, Stitcher Radio, which is a great app for your smartphones. And remember to always give us a little thumbs up, saying that you like us on Stitcher, or a star rating and a review on iTunes, because that stuff really does actually help us out in the long run. So thank you again for listening, and we'll be back next week. Sometimes
song.